This is Memories of the 20th Century. I'm Jerry Pippin. Tonight we're going to talk about 70s rock and roll, and specifically we're going to talk a little bit about John Lennon and Yoko Ono with a fellow who was there during their big recording session. And we'll have him on the phone here in just a minute, Ken Geringer, who is no stranger to rock music, and we'll talk about his career. He has a new book out called Nobody Told Me, From the Basement Band to Jack and the John Lennon Sessions. And I think you'll find it very interesting. Scott Simon was nice enough to come in tonight and talk to us for a little bit, because Scott knows just about everything there is to know when it comes to the Beatles and to John Lennon. Now, interesting thing about the timing of this interview, Scott, is his first wife, he married her, I think, either on this date or this week in history, didn't he? By the way, welcome to the show.
Oh, well, thank you.
Didn't he get married to her, what, on this date?
Tomorrow, back in 1963.
And then he got divorced the same week.
Well, she filed for divorce tomorrow in 1968 history.
Kind of interesting. It was the right to the day.
Well, that's the influence of Yoko Ono for you, I suppose.
Now, he knew Yoko Ono while he was still married to this woman. Who was this woman, again?
This was Cynthia Powell. He just met her in art school. And, oh, yeah, she met Yoko because she came back from a vacation one day and knew something was up, and she found Yoko's oriental slippers outside her bedroom door. And
ooh.
John and Yoko having breakfast. They just said, hi, how you doing?
So we're going to find out a little bit from Ken about John and Yoko and what a strange relationship that was. But I know you found an interesting website tonight. I guess you've gone to before. And why don't you explain to the listeners what this is all about?
No, I just I ran into it looking for completely something different tonight. But it's a form of, as they say, artificial intelligence. And it's called the John Lennon Artificial Intelligence Project. And it enables you, through the magic of the Internet, we all know how magical the Internet is, enables you to have a chat, a cyber chat, with John Lennon.
So literally, is this done by script, or does he actually talk?
Well, you know, yeah, as Sue pointed out, he's been dead for about, 22 years.
Yeah, I understand, but I think of it, artificial intelligence.
Yeah, what they did is they just put thousands and thousands of quotes from him, and it's somehow and apparently, from what I'm reading, is they intend for this thing to get more intelligent over time by the questions that it's asked. So it literally is some form of artificial intelligence, and it's kind of weird, frankly.
So it comes out on text, a transcript type thing.
Yeah, yeah. Just like an internet chat. Yeah.
Just like an internet chat, like if you go to AOL chat or whatever.
That's exactly. It's quite weird.
Now, not all the questions, of course, do fit. Yeah.
No, it gives some odd answers to some of them, yeah.
Of course, you asked some odd questions tonight simply because you were clowning around with it. You have a transcript, don't you?
I asked if he listened to the Jerry Pippin Show, and he asked if why did that offend people? Did the Jerry Pippin Show offend people? And,
well, that was kind of accurate.
And did Jerry Pippin listen to John Lennon? So he wouldn't admit to listening to KBIX, though. I don't know why.
He would not admit to it.
No.
Well, back before he passed away, KBIX was kind of refined to or confined to the Muskogee, Oklahoma area. Mm-hmm. Now we're all over the world thanks to the web.
Yes.
Scott Simon is here. Now your new hours are noon to 6, is that right?
Noon to 6 here on the Big 1490 KBIX, and my voice will hold out for the show.
And you have been actually, you got several little departments you do in the afternoon, pretty clever. You have a Beatles, a Beatles newsletter?
We have the Beatles News Network about sometime during the 4 o'clock hour every day.
And so people that want to keep up with the Beatles and all of the information, they can actually just listen to you every afternoon.
Somebody asked me, is there really Beatles news every day? And yeah, there actually is. Be it, something about Paul's new wife or Paul's big tour. He's coming to Oklahoma City.
Have we heard any gossip about that? I haven't been keeping up with that. How is Paul McCartney's new wife working out?
Apparently, they had a big slideshow about Paul and Heather at the big Beatle Fest in Chicago. The first picture was a picture of Paul and Heather, and apparently the entire audience booed.
They booed?
They don't like her. I don't know. What's Heather done to them? I have no idea.
So I guess maybe a lot of Linda fans still around, you think?
I guess I did. I wasn't aware there were that many in the first place, but I guess so, you know, just the memory.
So they're no longer over in that castle. They're back in the States?
Yes.
And so Paul McCartney, what does he do these days? He doesn't still have that group called Wings, does he?
No. Well, although he's coming out with the Wingspan book and DVD. No, it's just him with actually some younger musicians this time, and it's supposed to be a pretty good show, even as a tribute to George Harrison at some point during the show.
Well, we look forward to finding out all about that. We're going to go ahead and get Ken on the air here. If you want to hang around and ask a few questions, too, you're welcome to. We'll be talking to him. This is Scott Simon, folks, and this is Memories of the 20th Century. I'm Jerry Pippin. We'll be back in a minute.
There's napkins in the bathroom, just below the stairs. All of something happening, and nothing going on. There's all of something cooking, and nothing in the pot. They're starving back in China, so finish what you got.
Nobody told me there'd be days like these, hi. And guess what? That's the name of the book, and we have the author here as well. Nobody told me. From Basement Band to Jack and John Lennon Sessions by Ken Geringer. Ken Geringer is a former music industry executive and nightclub owner. And Ken, I guess that's where you got the title for the book, huh?
Hey, Jerry. I'm delighted to be here.
Good to have you on. You're up in the Catskills, huh?
Yes, I'm actually about 5 minutes from the original Woodstock site.
Wow.
I'm sure your listeners will remember that.
Yeah, of course. Now, you know, this pretty interesting book here, and I love the title, Nobody Told Me, and we found, you know, tonight we thought we could not resist starting out the interview with the song.
Oh, it was a tribute to that man and that song. You know, Nobody Told Me it's actually my true life rock and roll adventure. It begins with me stuck in a world with straight adults, stupid teachers, and Brady Bunch friends. Now, I almost didn't survive, but back then, I discovered rock and roll, hair, and an alternative high school, where I just spent my days jamming and learning how to record and produce music. And that's where it all began, 20 years. And that led me into the music industries.
Now, you know, I want to get into some of those behind-the-scenes stories, and we'll talk a little bit. You know, the book, Nobody Told Me, it seems to be a lot about a lot of things.
But, Jerry, I'll tell you, if your listeners like the movie Almost Famous,
mm-hmm.
they're going to love Nobody Told Me. But in this one, none of the names have been changed to protect the guilty.
Yeah, it's a good fast read, and you got some pretty interesting stories. Some of those we'll get into on the air. Some of them we probably shouldn't. This seems to be a book about not only, you know, great people in the business like Cheap Trick and Who, and of course John Lennon and
yep.
Yoko Ono, but it seems to be about Jack Douglas as well.
Yeah,
and about
is.
You,
producer extraordinaire. Well, to understand me, we got to take it back a while. We got to go back about 40 years to when I was 6 years old. Now, back then, I had what's called today ADD, attention deficit disorder. But, you know, back then, they just had no idea what that was. And I was labeled a bad kid with just absolutely no potential. I did poorly in school, and I was just always in trouble for my behavior. But when I was 13, it was at about the time of the counterculture, and that's when I discovered a free school. And did you ever hear of a free school, Jerry?
No, tell me a little bit about that.
Well, it was kind of the result of all the positive thinking that was going on back in those days. Now, instead of being put in a class with misbehaved kids, I found myself surrounded by teachers who told me I had unlimited potential.
And well, I you know, somebody told me that, I'd take that as a challenge.
Yeah, but in this school, there were actually no grades, there were no tests, and there were no report cards.
Well, what was the deal? Are you just trying to get federal government aid by having a body there? What was the deal? Free school,
well, the deal was there were teachers that really cared about these kids. I mean, there were so many kids like me. I was just bored in school. I understood what was going on, but it didn't interest me. I had other interests. In
other words, we'd probably call this not only a preschool, maybe a rock music school.
Yeah, you know, but the backdrop of my book is whatever I took from there, going through life, I've never compromised my beliefs or philosophies. And, you know, I like to think I got it from that time, from the time of the counterculture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there wasn't any peer pressure back then because we were all so different from each other. And there was more than one way to look at life. There was actually as many different ways as there were people.
Interesting. Now, you know, the thing that, and we'll get into quite a few of these things before we finish the hour here with you, but one of the things about this is that you did other things besides get in the music business, didn't you, at first?
Yeah, you know, I left Rockland County, New York, where I grew up, and I went to Florida in around 1978, and I started a wholesale import and export cosmetic business. And I'd work during the day, but at night, my house was sort of a studio where musicians from all over South Florida came to play.
So even though you weren't technically in the music business yet, you were going to be again.
Well, I sort of never left the music.
Yeah,
business.
I understand.
I sort of brought that with me wherever I went.
Now, reading this, and I'll get into some of the things. You had a little run-in with the Broward County Sheriff, we'll get into before the show's over, over a Cheap Trick, right, on stage?
No, it wasn't over Cheap Trick. You know, after I got out of the record industry, I sort of retired, and I opened up a nightclub in Broward County, and I booked a band to play on a Saturday night. But on that Wednesday night before the concert, their record was declared obscene. And it was the first time in America that lyrics were declared obscene. And they were playing at my club Friday night. The group was Two Live Crew.
Okay.
And I was the nightclub owner who got arrested for not pulling the plug.
Yeah, now that went on for a while. That court battle lasted a while.
Yeah, it's lasting today. I sort of started the whole censorship fight.
Now, I guess, really, reading your book, maybe you could tell us a little bit about Jack Douglas, too. The book seems to be as much about Jack Douglas as it does the superstars.
Yeah,
I guess Jack Douglas really was a superstar in his own right, right?
Well, let me tell you what Jack Douglas has done. He's produced all the old Aerosmith records, all the old Cheap Trick records. He's produced acts such as Patti Smith. He's worked with The Who. He's worked with Mick Jagger. He's worked with Bob Dylan. He's just on and on. He worked on the Woodstock album, the Bangladesh album. He's done records with George Harrison. He's just about done every important rock record that there ever was. Just producer extraordinaire.
Now where did you run across Jack in your career?
Well,
I mean, it seems to me that you were on your way up, and maybe he was having a little lull in his career.
Yeah, well, when I worked with record producer Jack Douglas, it was shortly after John Lennon died, and Jack produced Double Fantasy with John. Now, you're right, Jack was on a downward spiral, and record companies, you know, were hiring groups back then that looked and sounded like Aerosmith. And these producers were coming in, and they knew how to copy Jack's sound, but they would never go a penny over budget. The only problem is they weren't hired; they weren't getting the real things. So it was at the time where the companies decided that they didn't want to use the guys like Jack anymore, and you know, Jack was almost blacklisted from the industry for a while.
Hmm. Bro, what, for going over budget most of the time, or they just wanted to be a little more?
Well, in the
80s,
things started changing, and the companies just didn't want these outrageous budgets, so they were getting guys to come in. Like, there were all these new groups that were appearing that looked and sounded like Aerosmith,
mm-hmm.
and they were getting these guys in that knew how to copy producers like Jack, but they really were getting, like, the fast food records, I call them.
Now, we're talking, of course, about one of the great record producers of all time, Jack Douglas, and our guest is Ken Gehringer. He's on the line from the Catskills in New York. The name of the book is Nobody Told Me, and it's a very interesting book. Right now, we're talking about Jack Douglas, and you mentioned John Lennon. Is it true that he saw John Lennon or talked to him or something shortly before his death? I mean, like an hour or something, or a day before or something?
Well, an hour before John died, he was finishing up a session, and Jack handed him a cassette tape and said to him, "See you tomorrow morning, bright and early." And those were the last words Jack said to John, and John went into the limo, and, you know, the rest is history. But what really bothered Jack is that usually after the sessions, he rode home in the limo with John. But that night he had a session with another recording artist. So he he walked them out to the limo, said goodnight to them, and an hour later he got the news that John was shot.
And you were around during this recording session of Yoko Ono, right? The one for the Double Fantasy album?
No, I wasn't at the session.
Okay, but Jack
got
told
some
you,
great
Jack
insight
told you,
to what went on there.
Yeah, Jack told you a lot about it, huh?
Yeah.
I'd like to follow that up in a little bit. I'm going to take a break here in a moment.
Sure.
Interesting thing about you mentioned Jack Douglas and that story about seeing John Lennon only an hour before he dies. I imagine that made quite an impression on Jack for years, if he ever got over it.
He never has and never will get over that. And that's what the downward spiral was all about.
Ken Gehringer will be back.